This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I was not there for that exchange between Mike and that caller, but just the tone of that guy's voice is one of my all-time favorite of these opens, Joe. I just love that. I'm mocking you. It's perfect. It's perfect. All right, enough congratulations. Let's shift our focus. We spent some time talking about the NFL and some players the Bills picked back in April. Let's spend some time with Chris Peters of ESPN, NHL writer and draft analyst for ESPN and ESPN.com, and he's on the Western Hotline right now. Chris, good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's a little weird to me. It's the last day of June. And it strikes me now that we'd be probably trying to arrange to talk with you in a normal year about the guys the Sabres just picked last Friday and Saturday. Instead, all we've got is, you know, whether there's going to be a startup and what it's all going to look like and feel like. And, of course, the draft lottery happened, and even that is complicated. But it's been quite a year, I think.
Yeah, you could say that for sure. And you know, especially with how the lottery ended up, not knowing who's going to have the number one pick at this stage, and knowing, you know, who has 2 through 8 instead is just a little bit, it adds an interesting wrinkle to the whole situation. And certainly we hope that, you know, there'll be some hockey to be played, and who knows, maybe we'll get a draft sooner than later. If they're not able to get things going again. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really difficult for people in, you know, my line of work and the scouting industry. And it's really, you know, unfortunately for the most part, the people that are most affected are these players that still don't even know when they're going to start their own season, their junior leagues. And most of them have been shut down, you know, since mid-March. So it's been a long time for a lot of these guys, maybe the longest they've ever not been on the ice. So a lot up in the air right now, and just a wild 2020.
I wonder, Chris, how much time you've spent thinking about just how impactful that pause in March when it happened will be to this draft class. I mean, certainly scouts have been watching guys all through the fall and through the winter, but you're talking about playoff seasons here, state tournaments, and other big high-profile events that, you know, certainly junior teams would be sifting through the higher end of that, looking for guys to play for them next year. But some guys certainly would be draft candidates too. And I just wonder, like, how incomplete scouts feel like their work was not getting that playoff piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a feeling of a missed opportunity. You know, with any luck, they have a good book on, you know, kind of how they performed last year and kind of can compare that to where they've been this year. I think losing the major international tournaments, the World Under 18 Championship, is a big piece of the puzzle that is missing. It's a great way for guys to make that last impression. Not having a regular combine is another major factor. You know, in most teams have been able to conduct their interviews over Zoom and things like that, but to not be able to have the physical testing with the players and not to have the medical elements that can be one of the kind of last pieces of the puzzle of you know, kind of the off-ice component of these players, that's something that I think also, you know, is feeling kind of missed. And then for those players, it's kind of the same deal. It's their they lost their last chance to make a good impression. They lost their opportunity to impress at the combine, to look a GM in the eye and kind of give them a real good feel for who they are as a person and player. And so that is an impact too. And the other thing that'll happen on the back end of this, now these leagues could restart before the NHL draft happens.
Right,
so
right.
What do you do then? You know, in that, and how much stock do you put into the beginning of this season? Players have put in the time, hopefully, if they have the ability to work out, to get in better shape, to do different things, to prepare. And, they, you know, their body composition could be changed by next season. There could be a lot of different pieces of information that are new to scouts before the draft actually happens. So that's another major factor that we just don't know exactly how it's all going to play out yet.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 7 months from March to, you know, through September. And, yeah, I mean, if the USHL and the NAHL and everything in Canada gets up and running, then, I mean, I would think teams would kind of want to redeploy. Now, I don't know if they'd want to take a wrecking ball to the work they've done already and, like, dramatically change things, but that's a lifetime opportunity for guys to work on their, you know, their strength and their, you know, this off-ice conditioning. I mean, a kid at that age can change dramatically in that window of time.
Absolutely, yeah. Physical maturity, it can, I mean, that's one of the reasons that there's been some, you know, push in some sectors of the hockey community to move that draft back another year to being a 19-year-old draft. But, you know, it's just, there's so many different things that are going to come into play. And I think, you know, in terms of what scouting staffs will do is, you know, I don't think that there can be so many drastic changes from one year to the next in terms of the way that you would slot these players, because you're looking at that projection. But if you see, you know, if there's a major injury, if there's something else that kind of happens that would knock them off of their developmental trajectory, then you do have to make those kind of decisions and say, you know, how much risk are we willing to take if we have new information that causes us to reevaluate the way that we've made a board. So, yeah, I mean, this is a completely unconventional year. I know that, you know, a lot of the scouts that I had talked to were kind of hoping that they might do the draft before the restart. A lot of general managers obviously didn't want that because the draft is such a great opportunity to reset your roster with trades and you know, and to compile picks, and it can be a real rebuild, especially for rebuilding teams, a huge event. But the scouts, all their work is essentially done, and now they kind of have to sit on it and hope that, you know, we have a draft here before too much new information comes out next year. And I think the most prepared scouting staffs are going to be the ones that feel the best about where they're at right now.
How much of a sense, Chris, I mean, you mentioned, you know, talking to scouts, how much of a problem do you envision the border being? You know, because if that extends into the fall, I mean, I would think that there's plenty of kids that want to go play in, you know, if they're lucky enough in the OHL or whatever, but even like the CCHL, the BCHL, like these junior A leagues that produce a lot of college players, like I wonder about the border.
Yeah, I mean, I think the border is an issue. A college campus's opening is an issue. You know, there are a lot of different things. And certainly you're dealing with, and if you're the CHL, you're dealing with teams on both sides of the border. You're dealing with potentially different rules from different municipalities on gatherings. And, you know, if you're a junior hockey club, you cannot make money without a gate. You cannot make money without fans. And you cannot really operate without fans. And so if you have anything, I think in the WHL, they already said if there is any ordinance that says that they have to have under 50% of their building capacity or under 50% of their capacity, they won't be able to resume. And so that's a huge thing. Then you're also talking about import players. You know, what are they able to enter the country? If you're going into Canada, you have to, you know, self-quarantine and you have to get back earlier. And there are all these different things. Some junior teams are going to be losing their players to the NHL teams that drafted them for this playoff run. And you don't know how long you're going to be without them. So there are a lot of different things that kind of have to come into play. And there's so much that we don't know. I know that, you know, the European leagues in particular are pretty hopeful that they're going to be able to start by October. And I think the KHL is even has an early season tournament that they're potentially going to hold, that's in August, I believe. USA Hockey is supposed to be holding their World Junior Evaluation Camp in Plymouth, Michigan coming up. That's another event that scouts could potentially be at. As of right now, that is on. That's supposed to start in late July, where they have 44 players coming in from around the country. I'm still a little bit surprised that is still going to happen. But a lot of those guys are draft eligible, and so of course they're going to go and try and showcase themselves a little bit more. So it's there are so many things that we don't know, but obviously it has a gigantic impact on the hockey landscape as a whole, and it's going to be very difficult to navigate for the players, for the administrators, for the NHL teams. I mean, I wish I had better answers, but it's just we're still kind of at the mercy of this virus and what happens with the numbers going up right now.
Yeah, boy, no doubt. I saw a piece, I don't remember where now, there were different commissioners, AHL commissioner, the USHL commissioner, and maybe another. And the USHL commissioner basically said, like, the same thing you just said. Like, if we can't have buildings with fans, then, like, that's it. Like, there's no way we're starting a season. And, you know, I think any junior league would certainly fall in line with that. We're talking with Chris Peters, ESPN, NHL writer and draft analyst. All right, so the way it shook out on Friday, like, how embarrassed, if at all, should the league be that they allowed this to happen? Because I think it's a pretty tough look right now that the potentially, say, Pittsburgh or Toronto, if they start up and play, get bounced in the first round, they've got a 12.5% chance at Alexis Lafreniere, and that's obviously not what you intend when you have a lottery, I don't think.
Right, yeah. It's not a great look. It could look worse. You know, let's say Edmonton gets another first overall pick. Let's say Chicago with three recent Stanley Cups gets a first overall pick. I mean, those are the types of scenarios that you know, have you've opened yourself up to. But I think, you know, in the end, there was no good solution. I think that you had to get, you know, I would have liked to have seen that they kept the lottery to the eight teams that were in that, you know, that basically were already knocked out. And then those are the eight teams that have a chance at the number one pick. That would have been my personal preference. But I also understand the fact that if you play in a play-in game and you basically get five games to try and extend your season and you lose out, I think it would be it'd be a pretty empty feeling, especially for those teams like a Chicago that was already out of it. You know, that would have been a pretty difficult, you know, look for them. And they're like, hey, we don't even have a chance to get to win the lottery. So I think the NHL did the best they could given the circumstances. I don't think it worked out in the best way for them, but I do think that there was some intrigue in terms of what it created. I mean, certainly, you know, it helped them dominate the news cycle for a little tiny bit there.
Yeah.
But in the end, you know, I think it worked the way that they basically the only way that it could. And of course, we have the lowest ever possible seed get the number one pick in an NHL draft lottery ever. So, I mean, that's just, it's like 2020 in a nutshell. So,
right. I guess
what can you do?
I guess if it was going to happen, this was the year to have it happen. Yeah,
exactly.
I hear that. We'll get to the prospects at the very top here, but the Sabres end up at pick eight here. And I'm wondering what you think of their chances of, I mean, I don't think you get a player that can play for a year or two anyway. Would you think trading that pick might be a good idea for them, considering how long it's been now, nine seasons with no playoffs, or even in the play-in round, they finished one point out of the play-in round? What do you think they should do at pick eight?
Yeah, you know, I think they certainly would need to have something, you know, pretty significant coming back the other way. I do think that they're in a range where they're going to land an impact prospect and a player that's going to significantly improve, you know, a prospect pool that's kind of only okay. You know, Dylan Cousins is an exceptional prospect. They have, you know, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has a tremendous upside, but I still think there's pieces that need to be put together there. And you're right. I don't think there's anybody that they would land that's NHL ready. There's not a guy that's going to come in and help you immediately that's going to be available there at eight, but there are going to be some really good options for players in various positions that you have to at least consider. And one of the ones that I think they're really going to consider, you know, is looking at some of these dynamic forwards. There's a good chance that one of those guys that's kind of been in the consensus of, you know, top five, top six guys could potentially slip down to eight. And, you know, that's like a Marco Rossi, a Cole Perfetti, Lucas Raymond, Alexander Holtz, you know, those are guys that have dynamic offensive talents that could, you know, potentially help you in, you know, a year or two. And that's not too bad. There's also a couple of elite defensemen. I think two guys that have been kind of neck and neck for me all year long, Jamie Drysdale and Jake Sanderson. who have, you know, Sanderson's the more complete defenseman. He plays, you know, a physical brand of hockey. He's going to the University of North Dakota next year. And then Drysdale was part of Canada's World Junior team and played for the Erie Otters last year, has more of that dynamic offensive element to his game. But those are the types of players that you're going to find in that range, as well as the Russian goaltender Yaroslav Askarov, which, you know, you may not want to take a chance on just given the fact that you have some prospects in your system at the goaltending position, and there's some value there. But I mean, I think you have to keep your options open given the position that the Sabres are in, and trading is certainly an option. But you have to what's the package that's going to make sense to potentially move away from a guy that I think could potentially be an impact player in the next few years for them? Because I do think that the draft really starts tapering off around 11, and then so you're really in a pretty good range if you're in that, you know, essentially 2 to 8 range. It's pretty, you're going to get something pretty good there.
Yeah. How much, in your experience, Chris, do teams think about positional need versus just the caliber of the prospect? Because as you're talking there about the defenseman, and I guess you can fit Askarov, the goalie, into this too. If I'm the Sabres, if I'm going to hold on to the pick, or maybe even if I'm not, I mean, if I'm going to wait until the post to make the pick and then trade it, the value of it could fluctuate depending on what's available there. Somebody's really in love with one of these forwards, like you said. Maybe you can do pretty well in that trade. What you want is for teams ahead of you in 1 through 7 to, quote-unquote, need defensemen or maybe fall in love with the goalie.
Right. Right, yeah. I think that for the most part, teams are going to go best player available. I think that that's usually the way it goes. You know, when they build their boards, however, you know, there can be positional preference that creates that best player available. If it's close between a defenseman and a forward, they're usually going to take the forward. If it's close between a center and a winger, they're definitely going to take the center. You know, if it's close between a defenseman and a goaltender, they're going to take the defenseman. You know, you just kind of try to make those picks based on both, you know, the quality of the player. And, you know, you consider your positional needs, but I think especially when you're in the top 10, you can't really deviate a whole lot from best player available. I think that if you try drafting for need in those ranges, you're bound to pass on something that would be better than, you know, if need is your primary focus. So I think usually, you know, best player available, and certainly if that ends up being Yaroslav Askarov, the goaltender, if you think he's the best NHL prospect available, you take him because – I mean, he does have the look of a potential franchise goaltender.
How good an idea is that, a goalie in the top 10, just in your opinion, Chris?
It's a risky one. There's no question. I think, you know, he's in my top 10 as a prospect, and I have not had a goalie in my top 10 ever. So, you know, so he's kind of unique in that regard. I think that there's something special about this particular prospect, but mm-hmm. It is a high-risk position, and we've seen it happen where top prospects have not panned out, and it takes goalies a lot longer. I think, you know, you're looking at a 2 to 3 year to 4 year proposition when you're drafting a goaltender, even one as good as Askarov. So, but I think, you know, you look at what Philadelphia has in Carter Hart, and you look at, you know, even the Washington Capitals have Ilya Samsonov, and you know they have depth at the position now, mm-hmm. Which is a place where, you know, you always need to have a good quality goaltender, and especially a team like the Sabres that's been kind of in perpetual search of a franchise goaltender since Ryan Miller left town. It's something that you have to at least think about. So he's one of those really unique prospects where, you know, I don't necessarily think the Sabres would go in that direction given kind of the way things are going in the organization and their desire to compete sooner. But he is a very intriguing talent, no question.
Yeah. How high did Knight – did Knight go 13 last year? Is that where he
13,
went?
13, yep,
I forget.
13.
Right. And that's – like, he's a unicorn. He went and played D1 at BC, right, like as an 18-year-old.
Correct.
And like that just very few guys are capable of doing that. So we have 2 years in a row where you've got a prospect that is, you know, I feel like if we talked to you last year before the draft, I probably asked you the same question about Spencer Knight that I just asked you about Askarov. Like, is it a good idea or not? You mentioned, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, even Knight was great. You know, like that was one where I hedged a lot more on him than I have on Askarov.
Okay. You mentioned Dylan Cousins in the course of talking about the Sabres prospect pool, and maybe, you know, he's someone that, you know, I think the fans might be a little gun-shy about asking or seeing the Sabres ask too much from, because we just went through that with Casey Mittelstadt, who, you know, showed up and just has not taken the steps yet and ended up in the minors last year. And so here's Dylan Cousins, 1 year removed from his draft year, and, like, wondering if he can step in. Do you have an opinion about whether he's ready to be, well, I don't know, a second-line center in the NHL or an NHLer, period, this year?
Well, I think he definitely deserves a long look and an opportunity to compete for a spot, because I think he took significant steps this season. And, you know, he's got a lot of the good physical attributes. I think the one thing that Casey Mittelstadt did not really have coming in was that physical strength, that base of and foundation of strength. He had all the skill in the world. But, you know, and it also comes down to kind of that competitiveness, that fire, you know, and kind of developing on the fly. You know, and I don't know. I think, you know, sending him to the AHL was obviously the right decision for his development last year, and as frustrating as that may be. But, you know, I think you look at Cousins, and he skates like a horse. He's got good physical strength. He's got good competitiveness. You know, the hockey sense is pretty good. And you know, he played in some big situations this year. His production was up in the WHL. He was a leading player for Canada, World Junior Championship, and helped them win a gold medal. You know, I think he's one of the best prospects in hockey right now, no question. I know the gun shyness comes from the fact that Casey Mittelstadt was also at one point one of the best prospects in hockey. But, you know, I think that with Cousins, he fits so well. And I don't necessarily see him being, you know, jumping right into being a top six forward right away. And I think, you know, I look a little bit more at what the Carolina Hurricanes did with Martin Nečas this year. They had him on the wing. They had him at center a little bit as well, but they played him a lot on the wing, which I think was probably best for him. Didn't have huge minutes, played about 13 or so minutes a game. And he was on their second power play unit. He was getting opportunities like that. I think that's a really good thing. And they kept him in the AHL. Now, you can't do that with Dylan Cousins. You have to. That's one of the factors that you have to consider. Yeah. But he does have that ability to, I think, jump into the NHL roster, play down the lineup a little bit, be given too much too soon. And I really think, like, a guy like Ralph Krueger can help cultivate that talent with a player like him, and giving him only what he can earn. So yeah, but I think Cousins is a really interesting prospect. I think he's one of the best, you know, best I've seen this year in terms of growth from draft to this point.
And finally, I said we'd get to the top here, but we'll just a quick.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Quick thought on sure. The top end of the tier. Lafreniere is number one without question in your mind. Is Byfield close, or is it just a no-brainer?
Yeah, I think Lafreniere is certainly number one. You know, there's just you really can't miss with that one. And I think that the difference between him and Byfield is, you know, Byfield is much more about a projection, and I think his projection, his ceiling, is going to be very similar to Lafreniere, but that comes with a little bit of added risk, where Lafreniere has, you know, I think his floor is probably, you know, if what he is right now is his floor, that's pretty darn good. So I think that he's got an opportunity to make an instant impact. But yeah, those two guys to me are the top one and two. I think, but whoever, you know, if LA takes Byfield, they're going to have a tremendous talent there. And Tim Stützle, who's number three, is another guy that I really like as a player. And I think he's going to have a nice career as well. So it's, you know, at the top of this draft, it's fantastic this year. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I think that even goes right down to number eight.
Thanks for all this, Chris. Big fan of the work, and appreciate all the time today, man.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That is Chris Peters, ESPN and ESPN.com, NHL writer and NHL draft analyst on the West Hur Hotline. We will take a timeout, and we come back. We'll spend some time on some things that happened on this date a few years ago. We'll lay that out for you as we continue. Sneaky Joe DiBiase is going to have an update for you. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope has the day off, and this is WGR.
Well, what I remember about that team is obviously it's all Dominic Hasek. I mean, we didn't have any superstars up front. You know, we had Miro Shatan, who is a 40-goal scorer. You know, our defense core, we had Zhitnik. You know, but obviously our whole, any chance of success really revolved around, you know, the Dominator, and he was spectacular to play with, probably the best player, the most impactful player that I ever played with.
That is former Saber, Canuck, Whaler. Ooh, I would need to Google from here. I'm not sure if there's more. Jeff Sanderson
expansion
was a
draft.
Guest.
Too.
Okay.
You're missing that one.
Ooh.
The Sabres lost him in an expansion draft.
Yeah. Columbus?
Columbus is correct. He had 230-goal seasons there.
Okay.
You had Vancouver. You had the Whalers. He would have spent 1 year in Carolina, their first season, I think, 97-98.
Oh. Okay.
And then 1 year in Phoenix in 05-06, and a year in Philadelphia, and then a year in Edmonton, and that was it. That's a lot.
The Sabres got him from Vancouver for Brad May. I'm not even looking that up. That was the trade. I don't know if there were other parts, but that was the trade, I think. Right?
He played 9 games in Vancouver in 98, and then the Sabres thereafter.
Okay. So he was on the morning show with Howard and Jeremy, and he's talking about Dominic Hasek there. And funny enough, I mean, it's this time of the year, right? There's a lot of hockey anniversaries that come up at this time of the year. It's the NHL draft traditionally. It's free agency coming on July 1st, and of course, none of that is happening in this year, unlike any other. But in a normal year, of course, that's what happens. And so we've got the Hasek thing was today in 2001, like I think late in the day, like it was, you know, maybe close to midnight anyway. But so that happened. Do you know that like 5 days, 6 days, maybe 5 days prior to that, I think I had the date earlier, the 25th of June, that same off season was the day they traded Michael Pekka. So you had a team in 2001, the Sabres were, you know, overtime against Pittsburgh in Game 7. They were overtime to win the series in Game 6. They were like less than a minute away from winning the thing in Game 6 in Pittsburgh. Anyway, you know, of course, didn't work. They lose in overtime. Pekka had sat out that entire season, and the Sabres had, that's Gilmore and Andrechuk back. That's Audet and Hines, right, I think, are all on that team. Like, that is a nice group. And no Pekka all year, and the season ends, and Pekka gets traded, and 5 days later, there goes down. And, you know, I said earlier, like, I know, like, the Ryan O'Reilly trade, which is only 2 years ago tomorrow. So, again, I know it's kind of a little ghoulish, like looking at the history, because there's not a lot of good moves there. I'm sure there are some good ones, but we remember the gaffes, right? And O'Reilly is bad, and we're still, you know, lamenting it. And, you know, Jason Bottrell lost his job. I don't know if he chiefly lost it because of that trade. I'm sure a lot of fans would tell you that, but I don't know that the owner necessarily fired him because of that trade, because, you know, I've come to find out, and I feel pretty good about it, that it was ownership that really wanted that trade to happen. But nonetheless, that happened, and that was really bad. The Hasek trade is just hideous. It's Slava Kozlov, who just does not want to be here at all, and he barely plays. He gets hurt, and just has well, I picked him in the cup of coffee draft a couple weeks ago, and I had it. I think he only had two seasons where he had under double digits in goals, and one of them was here. The other one was like at the very end of his career in Atlanta, maybe. So, you know, it's a guy that was like, you know, he's not, wasn't never a great player, but he was 20 goals, pretty regular, dependable, and just nothing. And a first round pick that the Sabres traded away to move up to draft Danny Pailla, in that summer's draft. And, future considerations, I think is the other, I don't know, whatever became of future considerations. And, you know, I got some, you know, I put it out there this morning as I saw the tweet about this being the anniversary. I'm like, you know, of course the O'Reilly trade is more front and center now because it's, you know, pertains to the team now, and Ryan O'Reilly won the Stanley Cup and was the MVP of the playoffs, and, you know, we know the story. I mean, it looks bad, it tastes bad, it feels bad when you think about that trade. I think the Hasek trade is even worse. Even though O'Reilly is maybe close to 10 years younger at the time of the trade. Hasek, you might think by 2001 he's not Dominic Hasek anymore. Like if you don't go back and look at it. But he won his sixth Vezina trophy at the conclusion of the 2001 season. He was still – now, that's the last one he won. So, and in Detroit, it was, you know – He was 36 years old. It did start to turn, but still, he was the best goalie in the league, and the best goalie who ever lived. And you traded him at gunpoint for nothing. I mean, just nothing. Just brutal. It's a horrible job. Like I wish you could have the wherewithal, the strength to have, like, called his bluff. You know, you're going to retire? Okay. Well, I am not trading you for garbage. Now, Kozlov, maybe if you're Darcy Regier, you're counting on 20 goals, and that's not garbage, right? But just, and then there's always that story about how, and this came up today, and I never heard Sergei Fedorov's name attached to this, but there was a guy on my Twitter feed asserting that Fedorov was going to be the piece. He ended up in a contract impasse with Detroit a couple of years later. So maybe that does make some sense, but that Hasek would not report, just would not allow the trade to go through because he didn't want to go to Detroit. If Fedorov was not going to be there. That was always like a story that made the rounds. I never heard it from someone that I trust, like had it, you know, like just bang nuts had that. But it's been one of those things that comes up if you're out in a bar. Remember bars? If you're out in a bar talking with friends or acquaintances, whatever, and you're talking about stuff that, you know, like this, and this comes up, someone surely would tell you that the Hasek negotiated not only getting out of here with the trade demand, but also mitigated what the Sabres could get in return as well. So just not, you know, just a pretty damn bad day is where it ends up. And mostly I just wanted to mention that Hasek, despite how not great he looked on that Darius Kasparaitis overtime game-winning goal that cost the Sabres that series ultimately in 2001, he was the Vezina winner that year. Like he had a very, very good year. And even the following year, the first in Detroit, the save percentage was still .915, which is, you know, not peak Dom, but he still was not he was not like washed up when they traded him, is really the point. He was still the best goalie in the league. Yes, he was 36. Yes, there were not a lot of great years left. So that does sort of, I guess, brush right up against washed up in a way. But, I don't know, you win the Vezina Trophy as the best goalie in the league, I don't think you're washed up yet. And so, you know, happy anniversary to the Dominic Hasek trade. We missed the Michael Pekka trade anniversary last year. Sorry, missed it. Tomorrow, we get to celebrate Ryan O'Reilly Day.
The Hasek, I'm looking at his numbers right now. Like, he wasn't washed up. He wasn't the same. But even 05-06 with Ottawa, he was second in the league in save percentage.
Yeah,
and that right. was like 5 years later. So, right, maybe you only get one or two more really good years, but...
Yep.
Fedorov, too, you know, if that had become a thing, he wasn't the same player. He wasn't putting up 100 points anymore, but
yep.
30 goals every year, at least.
Right, yeah. I mean, I had never heard his name specifically. And again, like, it was someone that said it. Like, I know it. Okay.
I think growing up, because Hasek being traded, like, I don't really remember it. Like, I hardly remember him in a Sabre uniform at all. I think it was 6 when he was traded. But I remember growing up, like, the sentiment towards him. And mm-hmm. it wasn't just, like, when I was growing up, it was not ever about how good he was. And
I know.
That would have been the immediate, like, I'm growing up into, like, he wanted out, he demanded out, and they got nothing for him. Like, that angst towards Hasek was still evident. And I don't think I was able to appreciate, like, what he was as a player until long after that.
Yeah,
and
it was all,
maybe that's different if you just go, and this, like, if you just go, hey, we're just not trading you, and
right.
see how that plays out.
Yep. You, I'm glad you raised that, because that is the other part of this. Like, he was, I was on the air for most of it. I mean, his time here. I mean, I started in 95. So, you know, he becomes Dominik Hasek like a year before I start talking on the radio for a living. And he was, of course he always had his fans, and they were like fervent and just not to be deterred. But I think largely the fan base begrudgingly accepted that he was excellent, because there was stuff like fans loved Ted Nolan, and Dominik Hasek's in the middle of that. There's a thing with my dear late friend Jim Kelly that did not help Hasek's reputation, even though I know he made that right with Jim before he passed away. But he was not a very beloved figure. Even in the days he was playing his best for the Sabres, it was sort of, he's great. You know, it was kind of like that a lot of the time, which, you know, now you get removed from that, and you look back at the run of 930 save percentage years and just go, oh my God, yeah, of course we fired the coach he didn't like. What would you do? He's the reigning MVP. Yeah, you're damn right. We're going to take the coach out back. Like, that's how sports work, you know? But it was a weird career here, I think, is one way to put it, that I think you don't really tend to think about it all these years later, but I think that's how I remember it. I don't think I'm misremembering. I think that's pretty much how it was. All right, we'll take a time out here. I do want to get to this story. Joe's had it all day in the updates here about what the Bills are doing with their season ticket holders, and just maybe see if some fans want to share like what they're thinking at this point on that. We'll hopefully get into that as we move into the 5 o'clock hour. Take a time out here. I'm the Bulldog, Sneaky Joe DiBiase along as well. Mike is on vacation. This is WGR.
The Titans are very much like the Bills, right? Their MO is defense. And because of that defense that they have, and then you, for the Titans, you mix in the running game, this team is always in football games. And that's how the Bills are. They are always in a football game just because, you know, that defense is just suffocating.
That is Teron Davenport, ESPN Nashville. He's been a guest on this show a time or two. He was on with Nate Geary earlier today. Nate has been filling in on the One Bills Live show this week, early in the week. I think Joe is handling that on Thursday.
Yep.
We're squeezing it. We're squeezing in vacations, man. One Bills Live. Instigators, right? Brayton has been doing the Instigator show mm-hmm. this week. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. All right.
Everybody's all right. On vacation. It's vacation week.
It is. After Thursday, I'm gone for a stretch, too. So, I don't know. That feels a little bit normal, I guess, right? Like people taking vacations. It is summer, you know.
I don't know who is going anywhere. I would imagine that this is a good time to be here, though, right now. This is probably the most consistent week of weather in my life here. But
yeah. It's been good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, we've got, I've got this time off. I've not thought about, like, we don't ever make plans for summer, you know, because of Canada. And so, like, that's vacation. Like, we spend money to keep that house there that my in-laws have had for a long, long time. And so, like, that's our vacation, you know, basically, is just going over there. So, now without that, I mean, we've already, you know, spent what we spend to keep the house. But still, you'd like to maybe do something. But I don't know. It's a little weird. Next week is going to be odd to me, like being here with nothing to do. I know what I have to avoid is just having days like most of the days I've had since this all started back in March, which is get up at 9-ish, maybe. Like, I feel like I want to give myself a pat on the back if I get out of bed and there's still an 8 is the first digit on the clock. Like, oh, I'm up early, you know, right? Like, you know, I've gone from getting up at 6 every day to sleeping until into 9 o'clock. And then just sort of, you know, I just sort of laze around and figure out what I'm going to do for this. And, like, that's it. That's my day. And I definitely don't want to do that. I mean, even without this part in the middle of the day doing the show next week, if I catch myself just sort of sitting on the porch at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to just get in. I'm going to get in a vehicle and go somewhere. I can't just sit here.
Do what I did last weekend. Just go find some wilderness and just put up a tent.
Yeah, right. It's an idea. Maybe. I've never been a big tent guy.
Yeah.
But
that was the first time I've ever stayed in a tent.
Yeah.
At 25, is that crazy that has never happened before? But
no, I don't think so. I think I did a time or two as a kid, but it was not a very regular thing. Where did you go, by the way?
We went to Cayuga State Park, right by Cayuga Lake in the Finger Lakes area. So a couple hours away, just got away from things. So you got to get creative nowadays. Uh-huh. You can't be going out places. So I'm like, if you're ever going to go camping, this seems like the time to go. So I had never gone before. We gave it a shot. I thought it was pretty fun. So,
all right, good deal. All right, you're expanding. I did.
I am. Yeah. I think
I did. I also something new, a new venture. We'll see. Maybe there'll be time. I want to get into next segment here. This story, and I don't know if Bills fans want to share what their thinking is, if they've been contacted yet, or certainly it sounds like they're going to be if they haven't been already, what you are going to do with your Bills tickets. You know, it's a really interesting year. Of course, we've got this reality that we've been living through and living with, and we don't really know what the season's going to look like, and the Bills are supposed to be good, maybe as good as they've been in a long, long time. So I don't know, it's a tough choice to be made there, maybe, for some fans. Maybe it's not hard for some people. I'm going to lay that out more in depth and hopefully get some input from fans at 803-0550 and 888-550-2550 when we continue. Sneaky Joe will have an update. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope is on vacation. This is WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.